This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Draft that starts on Thursday. He covers the Browns for the Chronicle Telegram. You can read all of his work at brownzone.com. And Scott joins us right now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Scott, first round excitement building here in Northeast Ohio.
Oh, I can feel it. It's oozing through the phone.
Is it really?
No. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I did see somewhere that Browns fan base is like seventh in the NFL in excitement for the start of the NFL draft.
Yeah, I didn't believe that.
Yeah, I don't either. Yeah.
They only interviewed three people, but that's okay.
All right. We'll get this out of the way. Is there any way they trade into the first round on Thursday?
No. Okay. I just don't see it. I mean, you'd have to give up next year's number one. You know, there's not a need. There's not like a glaring need that Andrew Berry would be chasing. So I don't know. I just can't picture that scenario. And, you know, not that Andrew would have told us if he was thinking about it, but I got no indication last week. I've got no indication at all. It'd be a huge move. I just don't see it.
All right. What do you see? Give me, look into your Scott Petrak crystal ball, second round. I'm not asking for a name. Give me a position.
Well, I think they probably trade down from 54.
Wow.
The more I think about it,
and that draft buzz is building right now, Scott.
Right, yeah. You guys got the right.
Oh, everyone's on board now. You're right.
Yeah. I just think, you know, we've talked about it. There's not a huge need, right? So not that that's what you're supposed to do in a draft anyway, but if, let's say, man, they really needed a receiver, you take the best one at 54. But that's not where they are from a roster standpoint. And philosophically, the Browns believe in adding more picks, right? It's a lottery. The more picks you have, the better off you are. And plus, they don't have a lot of draft picks, right? So I think Andrew Berry might want to add more draft picks that he's given up for, you know, in other trades. And it, to me, it just makes sense. He's done it the last 2 years. I just think it fits that unless the perfect player is sitting there that, you know, they hoped all along, maybe they thought he was the 35th pick and now he happens to be 54. Otherwise, I think they hope somebody wants to come up. And they move down and add a couple other picks and then take somebody later in the second round.
Okay. Trade draft picks for any players in this draft. Is that an option?
Yeah. Like, trade one of their picks for a veteran somewhere.
Yeah. Some team decides they must have somebody on the board and they give up a veteran to get that pick.
Yeah, I would never rule out them doing that. I'd never rule out them doing anything. I could see that, right? They're in a bit of a win now mode. And if you're trading, even if it's 54, right? We saw it last year with Elijah Moore, right? Yeah. They wanted Elijah Moore. They traded back from the second to the third round. If there's a player out there that fits and you're okay, he can have an impact right now versus a draft pick, might not have an impact for a couple of years. I could see them doing that. I think it would take the right player at the right spot. But I wouldn't rule that out.
All right. Still kind of looking at this. I've looked at a lot of these mock drafts. It still feels like offensive lineman, perhaps tackle, linebacker, wide receiver. I wide receiver to me seemed like it could be a little bit higher, but I'm trying to get a feel for what I think they need. And I actually feel good about the fact that I am struggling at this.
Sure. Yeah, I think you're right about that, Andy. I keep coming back to defensive tackle and wide receiver. And, defensive tackle, they added a bunch of guys in free agency, right, where they re-signed Shelby Harris, they re-signed Maurice Hurst II, they added Quentin Jefferson. So they have some volume there. But outside of Siaki Ika, who we did not see a whole lot of, is a rookie last year, they're not young there. And I think they could definitely be serviced by getting younger at that spot. And if they stayed at 54, I could see that being the spot they went after. Defensive tackle, you try to add maybe a difference maker there at 54. There's not a lot of pressure to play right away. So I like D-tackle there. I like receiver. And, they have enough receivers right now, right, with Cooper and Judy and Moore and Tillman and whoever else. But, Cooper's in the last year of his contract. Elijah Moore's in the last year of his contract. We don't know about Cedric Tillman. David Bell is David Bell, where, I feel like receiver, and it's a deep receiver class, that's somebody they could take, whether it's at 54 or somewhere else in the second round or in the third round. I would certainly expect them to take a receiver. The other positions you mentioned are interesting because, I think we lose sight sometimes that it is about beyond 2024, right? We're so focused on, what are needs right now? Well, linebacker, they don't value that super highly. They have JOK. They just signed Jordan Hicks and Devin Bush. But, Hicks is kind of getting up there. We don't know about Devin Bush. I mean, maybe they take a linebacker because they're thinking down the road. But to me, that's just not a position they value greatly. So it would have to be a stud that they really like there. And then tackle, I'm curious about tackle because if you think Jed Wills is your long-term answer at left tackle beyond this year, then you don't need to take a tackle because you have DeJuan Jones, you have Jedrick Wills, right? But if you don't think Wills is the guy, every indication in the building is that they really like Wills and they think he's getting better. But that would be a sign that, hey, you're going to let Wills go, and this next guy is going to be the future at left tackle or right tackle. And I don't know. I kind of feel like it could be Wills and Jones for a long time. But that's why I see a lot of tackle out there, and I'm just not sure because I think they might want to hang on to Jed Wills.
I think that's accurate. I would be surprised if it's anything other than a defensive tackle or a wide receiver. Not like, oh, my gosh, that's a mistake. It just seems like it's a deep wide receiver draft. You keep hearing about DTs maybe sliding down a little bit. It just seems like that's the perfect storm. It's going to be one of those two spots. And I agree with you, Scott. The need at defensive tackle, if there's any place where you think, yeah, we could really use a young guy to come in there, I think it's at defensive tackle. If they go somewhere else with that pick, I'd have to think about it a little while. It's like, okay, why did they do that? What went into it? So I'd be a little bit surprised. Would it stun you if they did something different than what we just talked about with those two spots and maybe offensive line or something like that? I think they might have a tough time justifying that, even best player on the board.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, Jeff. And, it depends. Like, the lower you get, then – even if 54 is pretty low, right? But even if you get lower than that with the trade down, then you can kind of throw all the rules out, right? Like, if you're picking a guy at 68, let's say, is there a lot of expectation that he's going to come in right away and play? No, or have a huge impact. So I think when it's that scenario, then it does open up the possibility to take a guy at any spot, right? I didn't expect him to take Martin Emerson Jr. when they drafted him. Corner didn't seem like a need. They took him. He winds up being really good and looks like he's going to be part of the long-term future. So I think let's say linebacker, because I've kind of been dismissing the idea of linebacker. Let's say they saw a guy that they thought was as good as JOK, right, who they traded up to get, which was out of character. Well, if that guy's there at 54 or 64 or wherever, I would be surprised, but you could explain it to me and I'd be like, okay, that makes sense because they feel like in 2025, 2026, this guy will pair with JOK and there's your two linebackers for the future, right? Like, and then it becomes more about the specific player and best player available versus trying to identify a need. And I do think that the roster is in that spot where it allows them to pretty much go anywhere, even though most of my focus and your focus is on D tackle and receiver.
What did we learn from these press conferences last week? I thought Andrew Berry was about as relaxed and loose as possible, but he also wasn't getting a ton of draft questions, too. I thought there was some pretty good insight there.
Yeah, he was certainly relaxed, and I think we've seen maturity isn't the right word, but we've seen like the growth, the more
experience.
Comfort from Andrews. He's gotten into this job. I think he's admitted that, you know, he feels more comfortable, and it shows up, right? But yeah, I mean, he doesn't give away a whole lot. I think he does remind you of their philosophies, whether or not we think they're trite, whether or not we've heard them over and over. I think he does, you know, talk about the flexibility and how they don't get locked into certain things. And the reality that when it comes to 54, they don't know if they're going to trade down, keep the picks, and what group of players are going to be available until about 10 spots before, right? So we can spend the next 3 days and 4 days talking about who the possibilities are, but you just don't know until it gets a lot closer, right? They have ideas in their head, but it's way too premature. So, you know, I think he reminds us of some of the realities. And then I thought, you know, last week we got some updates, some legitimate newsworthy updates on Deshaun Watson, right? When Watson talked about throwing full strength and trusting his motion and thinking he was in a really good spot. Now, other things were cloudy after the Watson interview, but the fact that Andrew Berry said, you know, Watson's throwing up to 40 yards, right? Like, those are the things that I'm most interested in right now is how's the quarterback's shoulder doing? And if he can throw 40 yards a month after he began throwing, that's a positive sign, right? If Watson said, you know, he's not feeling pain and he feels good and not everything's, you know, full strength and all that kind of thing, that's a positive step as we look toward, you know, next season and where Watson's going
to
be.
Scott, I want you to just think of the two philosophies that Andrew's told us over this year alone. One, that, you know, they look at every draft like it's the like they're an expansion team. And then the second I thought was interesting what he said last week about, I'm not really going to worry about it until we're 10 picks away. What do you think? Can we hold true to those two statements going into Thursday?
Yeah, you know what? The expansion team, I get it. Like, if you're sitting around in a room and you're talking about it, that's how you want to approach it. I don't think that most years that applies, even if they wanted to, right? I just don't think it's practical. You know, I flash back to 2020. They needed a left tackle. We knew they were going to take a left tackle. The draft fit because they're a bunch of highly rated left tackles. But they didn't view that like an expansion team where they're just picking 53 spots. They knew exactly what spot they were going to address, right? And I think you see that at specific picks, right? The year they took Cade York, obviously it didn't work out, but we knew they're going to take a kicker at some point, right? So I think that's – I understand the philosophy of it. I think it's not practical. And then the 10 picks thing, it would be interesting. Like, I don't think Andrew was being dishonest, but again, if you got a really honest moment, would he say, yeah, that's true, or is it more, hey, we think these five guys are going to be there. These are the five guys we're thinking about. We think we're going to have trade options, right? Like, but knowing you have to be flexible because you can't control what happens in the first 44 picks, right? My guess is they have a more narrow focus than, oh, we can only wait until we get to pick 44, right? My guess is they played out all these scenarios, but in the back of their mind going, we might have to scrap them all because a lot of stuff can change in the first 45 picks.
Scott Petrak joining us, Chronicle Telegram, brownzone.com, where you can read all of Scott's work. If I'm a team in need of a quarterback, I'm a little leery about this crew. And there's, you know, Caleb Williams, from all accounts, no-brainer, number one pick, has a fine career ahead of him. I've read Drake May called a he'll-get-you-fired guy. And Jaden Daniels is skinny. He's not real big. That usually doesn't work in the NFL. Bo Nix is there, Penix, J.J. McCarthy. There's some interesting guys. If there's a year where a team's going to make a big move for a quarterback and have it blow up on them, Scott, and this kind of feels like this could be that year, what are you hearing about quarterbacks in this draft? Because I think this whole first round is going to be dictated by these teams that need a quarterback making big moves to try and get one.
Yeah, and no, I think you're right, Jeff. I don't feel great about any of them, right? I mean, Caleb Williams could turn out to be great, right? You see the Mahomes comparisons, you see all the off-schedule stuff he does. But there's plenty of times you watch him, and I played golf in the freezing cold yesterday with the guy that says, hey, every time I watch him in a big game, he doesn't play great and they don't win, right, at USC. So, you know, I know Chicago seems to be all in, but, you know, I don't know if he can feel as good about Williams as he did about other number one picks, right, number of quarterback picks in the draft. They say, okay, this is the guy, right? And sometimes those work out and they don't. But personally, I don't have that same sense of security with him. And I think the rest, you know, I think it's true with most of the guys. I do like Jaden Daniels. I think he's my favorite of these quarterbacks. But, you know, we could have four quarterbacks taking the first four picks, right?
Yes.
You know, New England can move down, right? Somebody can move up. But you could have that happen. And anytime that happens, it is a bit scary, right? You think of, remember when, you don't have to go back that far, right? Zach Wilson and Trey Lance, right? All of a sudden, there's all this buzz. These guys get pushed up to 2 and 3. And then, you know, one of them's already been on a second team. One of them's going to be on a second team, right? Like, so it does feel like when you have this, when it's the lead into the draft and there's this consensus that, oh, there's a bunch of good quarterbacks, they all get pushed up. The failure rate is probably pretty high.
I'm just curious, like, if you're Andrew Berry and you're sitting here and you don't have these first round picks, all of a sudden you'll have one again next year. And, you know, I look how even I was looking through the headlines on your site, and, you know, he's happy with the way they handle things, but he's going to be happy to have one next year too. So I think they've done a pretty good job of handling this too, considering they haven't had the first round picks.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you can argue with, you know, the coming off 11-6, the coming off going to the playoffs with everything that they went through last year to get to the playoffs. It feels like when we've talked about how it feels like the roster is pretty much set, right? There's a lot of high-end talent on this roster where I don't find myself going, oh, man, if they'd only stayed at 24 and had that pick. Right now, we could talk about the trade all you want, right? And, yes, Watson has not played up to the contract, and he's not played up to giving up 5 draft picks, including 3 first-rounders. Right? I mean, that's the reality. And would they have been better off with those 3 picks than a guy who played, you know, 11-plus games? Certainly. But I think they've been able to overcome that and overcome the lack of picks and overcome, you know, a quarterback who hasn't lived up to that any part of that deal. And I do think that speaks highly to the coaching staff. It speaks highly to Andrew Berry and how he's been able to fill in the roster in other ways. And that's trading a 5th-round pick for Amari Cooper. Right, trading 2 low picks for Jerry Jeudy, right? Trading for Za'Darius Smith and then re-signing him. Like, he's figured out other ways to draft or to acquire talent. He's hit on a couple picks that weren't the first-round picks, right? Martin Emerson Jr., DeJuan Jones. So he's been able to fill it in enough, and that's hard to do when you don't have those first-round picks. So, yeah, you want one back, but as we head into the season with a pretty stacked roster, it makes sense to me that Andrew Berry can say, hey, yeah, we figured it out without those first round picks.
Scotty, thank you.
Thanks, fellas.
Hey, man.
Scott
thanks.
Petrank, brownzone.com. Brownzone.com. Read him in the Chronicle Telegram as Scott covers the Cleveland Browns draft coming up. And to me, quarterback is a precarious situation in this draft. That coming up after Jeff Thomas's 2020.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
It's Baskin and Phelps right here on The Fan. Scott Petrak just joining us, talking about what the Browns might do. I think Scott's on the same page we are, Andy. If it's not a defensive tackle, if it's not a wide receiver, I'd be a little surprised, but I think I trust
linebacker.
Andrew.
I could see him taking linebacker.
Kind of like Devin Bush. I like that signing. But, yeah, you know what? I could see that as well.
Again, you're looking for – if you're drafting in this position, though, you're probably looking for long term.
Well, I would think so. You get a four-year deal with them, not a five, since they're not a first-round pick.
Right.
But I would think you could – and Scott's thoughts on wide receiver are exactly why I think wide receiver, along with I want more weapons for Deshaun Watson. But you have two guys who are in the last year of their contract, Elijah Moore and Amari Cooper. Don't forget that. That's a big deal. And we'll see. I just think if it's not DT or wide receiver, I'm just going to think a little bit like, okay, what were they thinking there? It doesn't mean it's going to be a bad pick. Could be a great pick. And if there's clearly somebody on their board, it's like in their room, it's the same thing, that they think is the best player on the board, well, then that's what you do. You know, I don't think there will be any issues with anything they possibly take in this draft. And I mean that in with the second-round pick. Or as Scott said, even if they trade down, I can't see any issues because we don't see any glaring needs. With that in mind, there are teams that need quarterbacks. And there are quarterbacks in this draft. And available quarterbacks in drafts, Andy, become more valuable and take on greater talents, it seems, sometimes than maybe they actually have because of the need for the quarterback position. And, man, if I'm Minnesota and I'm going to trade up for J.J. McCarthy, if I'm Oakland and I'm going to trade up for Michael Penix, man, I think you could be setting yourself up for a big mistake. Or Drake May, who many people like and many people don't. It's like, wow, this could be a little precarious here for some of these teams.
I sometimes, though, I think the teams that end up drafting, like, when you look at the draft, how often do we see, like, okay, the number one overall has a decent career or has a good career, right? And then you see some, like, two or three guys that get drafted in the top 10 have mediocre or flame-out careers.
Yeah.
And then
doesn't that always baffle? Yeah. It baffles me. It's like, how'd you miss on that badly?
But then say you're looking at Penix, right, and he ends up at 13.
Yeah.
And he ends up going to Oakland at 13. Sometimes those guys, I think the hit ratio on some of those 10 to 20 round quarterbacks, 10 to 20 round picks, tend to hit as much as maybe some of the, like if there's three quarterbacks drafted or four quarterbacks drafted in the top 10, like I don't know why, but I always feel like Lamar Jackson's in the back of my head. And like I always feel like those guys somehow, some way end up making their mark in the league bigger than someone who was definitely drafted before them. I think that happens all the time. I mean, everyone wants to go back to Tom Brady. It's a once-in-a-lifetime kind of thing. But when you look at quarterbacks that are drafted later in the draft that somehow are, if you're giving them the time, you give them the opportunity to mature and understand the playbook and understand what it's like and not have to start right away, and you take that pressure off of them, and then you let them blossom back into the quarterback that maybe they were in college, I don't know. I'm not against that plan at all. I think there's a lot of wasted first-round picks on quarterbacks year after year.
The problem is, except you have to
do it because
it's the need. Yeah.
If you hit, then you're a winner.
And you could be a winner for a long time. Now, I'm looking at some CBS rankings right now, and these seem real typical. Drake May and Jaden Daniels have flipped in various rankings. But they seem to be 2-3 in most everybody's rankings. Williams for CBS is number one. May and Daniels are in that order. May is 2 and Daniels is 3. And they're listed as this is kind of weird, 5th and 6th best overall prospects in this draft. It's not often you have the quarterbacks at the overall best prospect in the draft. But right now CBS has May at 5 and Jaden Daniels at 6. J.J. McCarthy is the hot name and this guy's a winner label, and that might make some team jump up and try and get him. Drake May is kind of interesting because Josh McCown is the quarterback coach in Minnesota who coached him in high school and had Drake May in high school. So there's a relationship there. Josh also had the relationship with Sam Darnold because they played together in New York when Sam came into the league. So that's an interesting thing. Can Minnesota move up high enough to take Drake May? I don't know if he can, if they can. And they have two number ones. What more is it going to take if you're going to move up to the, you know, top three? You know, if Drake May's sitting there at three, you're going to try and move up. That's interesting. Is McCarthy the guy? You know, does he have all the intangibles because supposedly doesn't have quite the arm that the other guys have and some of the other things might be missing? Well, that's just scouting stuff. Maybe that's not the case, Andy. But when you get to Penix, who's listed by CBS as the 31st best overall prospect, and Bo Nix, who's at 37, that's still pretty high.
Look at the jump between Nix and Michael Pratt, the kid from Tulane.
Right, who's and got then, good size, and who, by the way, Mel Kiper at ESPN says is one of his 13 favorite guys in this draft. That, to me, is really interesting.
I mean, if those rankings are right, look at the drop between Bo Nix at 37 from Oregon, and then
all
just
the way
jump
to 88.
Well, even worse, look at Spencer Rattler from South Carolina, 125.
Which is why, Andy, if you're a team and you don't get one of those top three guys, let's even say four with McCarthy, where you might make that jump and you jump into the first round and you give up a lot to go draft a guy like Bo Nix or Michael Penix, and that's where you could end up making a mistake. Or maybe those guys are terrific. And the guys who are just everybody's darling when it comes to rankings and, you know, what they did at the combine and everything else, maybe they turn out not to be nearly as good as Penix or Bo Nix. That's real interesting. 216-474-0092, number to join us if you have any thoughts on this. Maybe thoughts like Nick Faldo has on John Rahm. You won't believe these. They're coming up on Baskin and Phelps. Get ready, NFL teams who need a quarterback. Your opportunity to make a mistake is right in front of you. We'll see if that happens. It's a very interesting draft coming up. I have some comments from Nick Faldo. You're going to absolutely
love. Yeah, I'm ready for
love.
That. Yeah. Ready for
Will's
it.
In Strongsville. Will.
What's up, Will?
Welcome to the show.
Hey, it's Leo. But
what's up, Leo?
But I had a comment on, you guys were talking about quarterbacks, and I watched them all. And I see the hype and everything, but the one guy I've looked at the last few years is Michael Penix, and he throws such a sweet ball. And he took Indiana to the Big Ten championship, and look what he did at Washington. I think the guy is a real winner, and people are sleeping on him. I'm not a fan of left-handed quarterbacks, but there's been a lot of great left-handed quarterbacks in the NFL, like Steve Young.
Mark Brunell.
Yeah.
Paul McDonald. Oh, wait, sorry.
Easy, Andy.
It didn't work out. Never mind.
But anyway, if the Browns were to take him in the second round, I would not be opposed to that.
Oh, he's not going to be there, Leo.
You don't think he's going to be there?
No, sir. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody takes him in the top 15, maybe even top 12.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah. I was just thinking, you know, Watson, every time I watch Watson, I'm not highly impressed. And if we're going to ride our whole franchise on Watson, we need a backup plan. And it doesn't – I mean, when Jameis Winston, you know, he's a good quarterback, but I think we need a young guy like Penix to come in and wing it. And that kid can throw the ball. I don't know if you – we didn't watch him a lot because he's out in Washington, but
he had, a great year for the Huskies. He really did.
The kid can throw the ball. I think he's the best.
All right, Leo, thank you very much. Leo sounds a lot like Will, doesn't it, Andy? A
little bit, yeah.
Nice job, Hody.
Good job.
Way to be, Hody.
Congratulations.
Appreciate that. Good job.
Oh, he's doing like the...
He's giving me the fingers.
No, you know, he's doing the chicken dance in there. He's like, moving both of his hands like this, and he's like...
I'll be... So Scotty Scheffler goes out and wins again today.
Yeah, he did.
And we're going to talk some baseball with Anthony Castrovince at noon, by the way. Scheffler goes out and wins again. Follows up his Masters win. First guy since Bernhard Langer many years ago to do that. Congratulations. Wins the first tournament after the Masters. The Liv guys went to the Masters and didn't really compete very well, right?
Okay.
There apparently is much more stink among people on tour and around tour and everything else with the Liv guys than maybe we think there is or should be. Do you care that some of these guys left? Remember John Rahm when he was at the Masters said, some guys wouldn't even look at me.
Yeah, at first I really did care. Now I don't care. PGA has kind of sold their soul, so.
PGA basically did an about face on everything, yeah. And they're trying to do, and talking to the Liv, the Saudi folks and everything. Who knows where this is going to go, but it's kind of interesting. And this one to me, I thought, oh boy, that's kind of fun. Nick Faldo. And
okay.
I'm sorry, I didn't name him sir. You know, I didn't grant him that. So do I have to call him Sir no. Nick Faldo?
Did we not fight a whole war with England over this about not having surnames?
I don't know. I thought
anybody?
I thought that was about
Injunction,
tea.
Injunction, Junction, what's your
about,
function?
I thought you it was know, about tea.
Schoolhouse Rock? Come on, man.
Wasn't tea?
No.
It was about naming people sir.
No.
So was Elton John okay?
Yeah, because he's from there.
Well, Nick Faldo's from there. Do Faldo's I have to call? Do I have no. to call Elton, sir?
No, you do not. Not here.
All right. Well, Sir Nick Faldo, even though I don't have to call him that.
Okay.
Apparently, he doesn't like John Rahm. Okay. So, Faldo is not working with CBS anymore. Unfortunately, I thought he was phenomenal. By the way, I thought he was a lot of fun, but he's working with some European stuff. And he was on a podcast recently. He joined Sky Sports Golf Podcast, and he works for Sky Sports doing a lot of stuff. And he was asked about John Rahm and Liv. And he was asked about John Rahm's preparedness, is the word they used.
Okay.
For the Masters. And
I love the air quotes that no one can
I know.
See you.
Well, I do that for you.
I know. It's good.
I know you enjoy it.
I do.
And he said this about John Rahm, and I just think, can't we all just it's golf. There's no need to scream at each other. But he said, Faldo said this, I know Rahm made comments that he watched Riviera and thought, I wish I was there.
Hmm.
And he Faldo said, the players was good. That was exciting. I bet he wished he was in there. And then he said this about John Rahm. He's been playing resort courses in his shorts for the last couple of months. He hasn't been tested. Maybe he's not quite sharp enough.
Wow.
Wow.
Sizzle.
Resort courses in his shorts.
Wow, really?
Now, I'll readily admit, I have not watched a whole lot of Live Golf. I watched a little bit when it first started. I've watched 6 minutes of it this year. It doesn't interest me. And when I see the guys, this is stupid. When I see guys playing in their shorts, I think, oh, good. You're going to join my foursome on Sunday. That'll be great. It just looks weird. I don't know. But Nick Faldo, he's been playing resort courses in his shorts.
I love it. I love it. I love when these guys start talking smack.
Well, it's golf, Andy.
Yeah, I mean.
It's golf.
You don't have the right label on the back of your shirt. Oh, burn. Burn.
Isn't that weird, though?
Is that a plastic hat adjuster you're wearing? Oh, ho, ho.
Three of the Liv players.
Dusted.
Three of the Liv players were in the top 10 at the Masters. DeChambeau, Cam Smith, and Tyrrell Hatton.
So apparently they were okay. And they own pants now because they didn't throw them all out.
But most of the Liv guys, I think there were 13 in the tournament, and 10 of them didn't do real well in the Masters.
Do you think 54 in shorts makes a difference?
Well, and Dan, I need your input. Faldo said resort courses. They're not necessarily playing courses that are laid out maybe as challenging as most PGA courses might be. Is that accurate?
Yes. They played, the one that I can't get over is the fact that they played a course in Orlando. I think I read this out of golf.com. The course in Orlando that they played, this was like 2 months ago, is known for the fact that during the day they have a 2-for-1 tall boy special.
Is that true?
That is true.
That's pretty good.
I had heard that there was a course here that they were all set to do, and the members at that club said no.
Really?
Yeah.
I just think it's only a matter of time until this thing gets unified in some way, shape, or form. And I kind of get the feeling, you guys tell me, kind of get the feeling that LIV's going to go away. And everybody
what's going to happen to the money?
I don't know. Everybody says it's not. But it maybe they, you know, maybe PGA sends guys to LIV tournaments. Maybe LIV guys get carte blanche to play PGA if they
maybe
want.
Maybe LIV changes their name to PGA. They get rid of some of the hokey stuff, like the team play. And it all kind of gets, and then they come back to the PGA rules to some sort, like no more shorts and let's play four.
The one issue here is what you just mentioned, Andy, the money. What happens to the money?
That those guys all just get paid out?
They've spent, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to get these guys on the LIV Tour, and now they're just kind of like, okay, we're making a lot of money and we're just kind of hanging out.
Well, the other part of this too is the merger includes the DP World Tour. And so I think this is just my hypothesis on the matter.
Was the European tour?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this is my hypothesis. I think what happens is the LIV Tour doesn't go anywhere. I think the holes expand. I think it continues, you know, it goes back to 72 holes instead of 54 or whatever the math ends up being.
The European tour?
And I think it becomes the European tour. And I think you end up with these guys going all over the place and then meeting up and coming together for elevated events. You know, so you'll have the four majors, and then I'm sure they'll pick
five or six other tournaments.
Exactly. And whether those
and
become
those
world
like,
events
those
or
are
those
big deals.
Exactly. Yeah. And whether those become world events or they become just U.S. events, I think that's the direction this all ends up going. Is we end up with one that's a world tour where you can get guys, and you'll get talent on the world tour of guys who want to play European courses and all that kind of stuff from that area to, you know, if you want to grow the game of golf, you are more than welcome to. I mean, there is some aspect to it.
And although
but there will always be a PGA side of it.
And although there are lots of guys, European guys, on the PGA Tour, there are also plenty of European guys not on the PGA Tour who just play the European Tour.
Right. And I think that's the direction we're heading.
So we have, what, four events on the LIV Tour that are in the States? Houston, Nashville, Vegas, Miami. What happens to them? One's Doral. One is Vegas Country Club. Maybe it's the Grove in Nashville where they do the tall boy stuff? Or is it Houston?
No, it's in Orlando.
Oh. I believe it's a course in Orlando, and I'm trying to find which one. I remembered reading that somewhere, so I'm trying to find it to make sure.
Two-for-one tall boys is pretty good, though.
That's a great deal.
Although the LIV guys shouldn't need that because of what they get paid.
True. Although I meant five left for the regular season.
Do you think these guys playing in shorts is any kind of a big deal?
I don't think it's a big deal at all. I especially think the caddies should be able to wear shorts at all times, but on nice days.
And not the white smocks they have to wear at the Masters.
Yeah.
Those are interesting, aren't they? The guy I almost feel sorry for here is Scottie Scheffler, because he's playing some of the best golf we've seen in maybe Tiger's heyday, and probably not getting the credit for it with the normal sports fan, just the regular sports fan. He is in the golf community, certainly, but, you know, he's not beating John Rahm. He's not beating Dustin Johnson, but he's still playing great golf.
But he's playing better than them right now.
True, but if they were on the PGA Tour, would he still be playing? If they were on the tour, would he still be dominating like he is?
Baseball, you're going to be mad at the Guardians for being in first place because they haven't really beat anybody good record?
You're right. I wonder what Anthony Castrovince thinks about that. He's from MLB.com, and he's going to join us next, right here on Baskin and Phelps.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.